Oh, that was good. Man, that got me excited. We are going to continue. For those of you that are guests with us, we started a series last week called Keep Casting, and today it's going to be one of my favorite sermons that I've ever gotten to preach. I've been waiting about 3 months, and I was going to preach it last week, but they told me you only got like 15 minutes because we're going to celebrate for just a moment, church. We baptized 59 last week, a record for our church. And man, at Genesis Metro, we always want to celebrate life change. Every time. Twice on Sunday, literally. Anyway, and today I want to be continuing that conversation that we started last week on perspective. And I want us to start thinking about our perspective on things, because perspective is powerful. Perspective will alter the way that you feel about any certain thing. As a matter of fact, when you think about perspective, and in the Bible, the stories that we're going to look at, I just want us to start thinking through critically our perspective versus his perspective. And what is great to do as you read the Bible, as you come into church on a Sunday, is always to cross-reference and compare and ask yourself, whenever I read the Bible, whenever I hear the teaching, and I look at my perspective, is it in alignment with God's perspective? For instance, when God is celebrating in the Bible, are those the things that you celebrate in your life? When God is saying these things are going to be harmful for you, your marriage, your children, are you staying away from those things? Are you in alignment with God's perspective? Because all of us are the sum total of what we were raised in. We're the sum total of our experiences and all of these things. And what I will tell you as a pastor is that getting someone to shift their perspective on something, it is difficult. If you have ever been married in your life, getting that person that you're married to shift their perspective on the way that it was done in their house, is that easy? Has everybody found that to be simple? Getting your children to shift their perspective? Anybody find it difficult? Like trying to convince a four-year-old why they need to brush their teeth. Anybody ever had this long, drawn-out conversation? Like, let me explain something to you. Your teeth will fall out of your head. Anyway, that's my reasoning level with children. Always go with the scary part. Anyway, when you think about perspective, let me show you something, that perspective and values are kind of married together. And the best thing that I could come up with is when you look down at your shoestring, if you're looking at it from when it's all woven together, you're going to say there's two separate things there, right? You got to tie those two separate things together. And think of that as one's perspective and one's values. But if you unweave it and you stretch it out, it's one. I'm going to tell you that perspective and values are one. And that perspective will always obey your values. I'll illustrate it like this. Imagine that we went out on the lake and you are a non-lake person. And that means that you do not like to be in the water at the lake. You might think it's dirty. You might think there's monsters in there. You might have the fear of the water. Do I have any people that do not like to be in lake water? Just by show of hands. Yes. Okay. A lot of people in here. And so imagine that we went out there in my boat and I said, you know what? We need you to jump in and I am going to be back in about 30 minutes. Your perspective is driven by your values. You don't like it, whatever you perceive is wrong with the water or what you don't like about the water. You're going to look at me and say, Tim, you can take me back to the bank. There's no way I'm getting in this water. But let me show you how quickly I can shift your perspective based on your values. What if I took one of your children without a life jacket that couldn't swim and I pushed them in the water? How quickly would you get in then? Why? Because your values drive your perspective. The things that you will and won't do are driven from what's inside of you. And the problem that we face as Christians is whenever we think of the weave of the two things, when it, if we're not careful, the chaos of life, sin, busyness, the stresses of relationships and work, if we're not careful, what we look down and we say those are two different things. And so we can say that our values are over here, but my perspective is over here. And if we're not careful, when we allow these things to drift, before long, what our values are not being lived out in accordance to what the Bible says. And so therefore, what we would say our values are, but then what our character shows, they're not in agreement. And so as I go through this passage today, I want you to begin thinking, is there anything in my perspective that needs to shift? Is there anything in my values that we need to change in order to come into alignment with God's word? And I think today it'll be a really easy to understand message that I think has the potential to change radically for some in here the way you actually look at Christianity. Because I think if we do it right, it should be a celebration. As a matter of fact, one of my favorite songs on my playlist right now is David Ruffin's version. He's the former lead singer of the Temptations. Anybody? Temptations? And he sings a version of I Just Wanna Celebrate. Anybody know this song? I just wanna celebrate. Anybody? I can sing. Y'all didn't know that I have that gift as well. I just don't like to show up Josh and my wife. And so anyway, I just want you to think about that your life should be celebrating on a regular basis. If God is doing things in you and through you, you should have reason to celebrate on a regular basis. But I fear many Christians, because they lack God's perspective, that the joy that should be there isn't. And they've allowed themselves to wander and drift in their values and their perspective to the point that what God intended for your faith to be and to produce, it's not producing anymore. So I don't want you to be robbed of what God intended for you. And I think today's story, today's message in Luke chapter 15 is going to illustrate this so well. Let's jump into the context of Luke 15 and then we'll run through the passage. And I'll just tell you the punchline right now is that the right perspective will and the wrong perspective won't. And as we go through this passage, I just want you to think about it, because it works on every level of life. The wrong perspective won't, the right perspective will. All right, let's go. Now, the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear Jesus. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." I need to do it with a little bit more inflection. If you have teenagers, and it can be all children, but teenagers especially, in the morning time, have you tried to have a reasonable conversation with them after they have woke up? Anybody like had to try to have this morning time? This is what muttering sounds like, you know, like, hey, what time? It's not words. Like, does anybody else know what I'm talking about? Like, you try to talk to your child, like, they can't, I can't even understand what you're saying right now. And what I'm saying is that the Pharisees were muttering, mumbling, and grumbling, and this was their attitude, so pious, so high and mighty. Why is he sitting down with these people? Sinners. Like, why would he even hang out with them? I want you to know something about how I look, and we all have this lens, right? Perspective. Like, I did not grow up in church, and my family was far from God. A lot of sin in the house. And I was a sinner and was the kid that led other children to sin. I was the guy that you would go to the teacher's conference and talk about, could you move this person away from my children? Okay, that was me. Always leading, just which direction are we going to go? Anyway, so knowing that I was a sinner and in a, you know, just an ungodly, broken values environment, and I would say that as a teenager, you know, I was starting to have a little bit of that hopeless feeling about what life was about. Because I honestly, it was that I felt unloved. So when I read these passages, I just want you to know it's personal for me. Because I am not under any illusion of which crowd I would have been in the story. I would have clearly been in the sinner crowd, okay? And so in my mind, when I hear the Pharisees, the religious leaders, we would call them priests and preachers today in our culture, when I hear them muttering and mumbling, I take it personal, all right? Like, it's personal with me, because what I hear in my mind is that I'm trying in this broken situation that I found myself in, that I did nothing to earn it or deserve it. It's what I was born into, and I'm trying to fumble and wobble my way through it, and God is trying to get to me, and I'm imagining me wobbling toward Jesus in the midst of all of the odds that are stacked against you. And then I hear these religious people standing off to the side under their breath saying, why in the world would he waste any time on Tim Bourne? Like, that kid, he's not worth it. What is ever going to happen with that kid's life? Man, do you know what kind of wrong perspective it is to not want to celebrate that sinners are hanging out with Jesus? Are you hearing me today, church? Like, that's something at this church we're going to celebrate. And I want you to know, we got sinners walking in every Sunday. Every Sunday. I'm looking at some of them right now. I'm telling you. Sinners. Sinners. And we wanted to create a culture where anybody could walk in from anything on any given Sunday, any given week, any given day, on their worst day, and find an environment where they could sit down with Jesus and experience life change and hope. And church, that's what it's all about. Can I get an amen? Yes. So here is this crowd of sinners around Jesus, and they think that they got it figured out, and of course that Jesus is doing it all wrong. And that's where I feel there's going to be some conflict today with some of our perspectives versus his perspective, and that's what I want to get into to see if we can figure this out. And so Jesus launches into three stories. I don't know if you ever went to your parents and asked them for something and you got a story. Anybody? Like, if you ever get a story, spoiler alert, the answer's no, okay? They launch into a story, it's a no, okay? Jesus launches into three, and it's the same story told three different ways. Anybody? Am I telling the story of any parent in here? Like, well, let me tell you about when I was a kid. Anyway, and so Jesus tells the story of the lost sheep. We call him the 107. He says there was a shepherd had 99 sheep, one wandered away. And the shepherd, does he not leave the 99 to go find the one? And when he finds the one, he said that the heavens rejoice over the one sheep that was found. Man, we are going to celebrate when we find that lost sheep. And then he launches into the parable of the lost coin. This says, this is a woman, she had 10 coins, she lost one. And she digs around and she digs around and she's like, she's got to find that one lost coin until she finds it. And when she finds it, it's like something lost being found. He said the angels in heaven are singing and praising when one sinner is found by grace. And so Jesus is illustrating to us the point that there's the value of the one. It's not that we should look at everyone as like homogenous. I don't look at you guys when I'm preaching at you with you. I don't look at, let's say, oh, this is the crowd. Because when we stand before God, we don't stand as a crowd. We stand as individuals. And God, Jesus, when he came to this earth, he saw you, not you and then. No. You as an individual, as one, he was trying to save, as if you were the only one. Man, that's powerful when we start understanding the value of one being found, one being saved. And he closes it up with one of the most famous parables, parable number three, the prodigal son. How many of you, by show of hands, are familiar with the story of the prodigal son? Okay, great, most of you. How many of you have ever lived in a prodigal season? By show of hands, all the prodigals in the house? Yes, yes. So this is going to be encouraging to you. You guys know the story that the prodigal son, he comes and he gets his inheritance and he goes out and he squanders it and then he comes back and we're going to pick up the father's attitude. Remember, the right perspective will, the wrong perspective won't. The father's attitude when the son comes back, he says this in verse 22. The father said, quick, bring the best robe, put it on him, put a ring on his finger, sandals on his feet, bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. Celebrate. Anyway, for this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And it says, so they began to celebrate. Oh, gosh. Next week, I promise you, if our band can pull it off, we're going to do that song. You just bring your popcorn, all right? And so here is the father's heart is revealed. So when we're trying to compare our perspectives, the father is celebrating. The father says, let's have a party. In Texas, we say we're going to have a barbecue. When you're thinking fattened calf, probably not a term you use. Barbecue, yes, Texas. And so he says, let's have a barbecue and let's celebrate this son of mine who has come home. Verse 25, this is where the story takes a turn. And this is where I want to get into wrong attitude, right attitude, wrong perspective, right perspective. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. And when he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. All right? Music and dancing. And I think it's not far-fetched to believe that he hoped and he thought that the party was for him. Now, I don't know if any of you know anyone where they are so narcissistic that if a party is being had, that they assume you must be celebrating me. Does anybody, like, I've known that person. Like, they just think everything is about them. And this older brother had a perspective problem, and he called his servant, and he asked him, he's like, what's going on? What's this party about? And he's all excited, right? Oh, a party. Must be me. And he said, your brother has come home. We're going to leave this verse up here. He's come home. He's safe and sound. Now, you know that the next verse should be, that the older brother is like, yes, my prayers have come true. I can't believe it. I can't wait to hug my brother. I can't believe after all these years and all the pain and all the misery, he's come home. I want to celebrate with you, Dad. Next verse. The older brother became angry and he refused to go in. So his father went and pleaded with him and said, son, come on, we should celebrate. Listen to his son's perspective. All these years, I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders, yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. Now I have to take an aside and just say that this is funny to me on face value, because like, can you imagine somebody so like, woe is me? They're like, you didn't even give me a goat, Dad. Like, is anybody else like find this to be hilarious? Like, he's like, I wanted a goat. You never gave me a goat. I wanted a pinata and I didn't get a pinata. Whatever. Let's make it about you. On this father who has been brokenhearted all these years, and let's make it about you. Am I talking to anyone in here? Like, does anybody know the story of the older brother? Oh. But when this son of yours who has squandered your property with prostitutes has come home, you kill the fattened calf for him? My son, the father says, you are always with me. And everything I have is yours. The wrong perspective won't. The wrong perspective won't. I'm gonna tell you something you already know. Have you ever talked to someone who had the wrong perspective on something? Anybody in here? You can draw it for them. You can send them to a training. You can put them in prison. You can do anything you want. And if a person has the wrong perspective, until their heart changes, the wrong perspective won't. And the church said, hey, have you ever tried? You can try. You can talk. How many times have you talked to them? And they still have the wrong perspective because it's driven from their values, and their values come from the heart. It comes from what you love. And if you love yourself more than you love others, it doesn't matter how much you coach that perspective, the values are going to make that perspective obey. The wrong perspective won't. The wrong perspective won't celebrate what God celebrates. Don't you think there's something wrong if God is throwing a party and you're over here pouting? Don't you think there's a problem with that? Like, if he's like, hey, I got a DJ, we got it going on, there's light show, I mean, you know, Abraham's on the fiddle, I don't know what's going on back there in these parties, but like there's a party going on, you're invited, everything is ready, the food is great. I mean, and you're over there, never got a goat. You know that perspective, if you're not careful, will prevent you from what God is trying to give you. Did you know that? He's like, I won't even go in. He wouldn't even enter into what God was celebrating. Do you think it's important that you have the right perspective? What if God has all these things he's trying to invite you into, and because you're over here pouting about something, about somebody else, that it's preventing you from going into what God's trying to celebrate with you? What if I even told you, did you see his perception was wrong? Did anybody see that? That his perspective was poisoned by the wrong perception. He said, you have never given me anything. And then it turned out his father said, yeah, I never gave you anything because you already own it all. What? He was sitting over there moping because his dad hadn't given him a specific thing because he had given him everything. But his perception had twisted it all. I know in our culture we say perception is, we'll try it again, perception is, that's not true. That's not true. If I boil some water and I tell you I have the perception that when I stick my hand in the water, it will not burn me, do you think perception and reality will be different? Yes. When we have the wrong perception, that does not make it reality. Just because I believe it to be so does not make it reality. The wrong perspective won't. In marriage, the wrong perspective won't be self-sacrificing. It won't. The wrong perspective will not lead children in the way that they should go. The wrong perspective will not manage money the way that God intends them to. The wrong perspective just won't. But the right perspective will. And the right perspective, listen to this verse, the father says to him, verse 32, after the pouting is over and he says that you own it all, he says, but we had to celebrate and be glad because your brother was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. The right perspective will always celebrate when dead things are brought back to life. I want you to know that in your marriage, there'll be a season maybe where it seems like it might be dead. And then God will, boom, breathe life into it. If God brings life to your death, then You ought to celebrate. Well, are you hearing what? You ought to celebrate that God did something that you didn't deserve. Whenever he brings a child that has wandered away back to you, are anybody, am I talking to, yes, when he brings the lost back and they are found, you ought to have reason to celebrate. Are you hearing? This is what the Father celebrates. Therefore, this is what we as Christians, as believers, should be celebrating in this church and in our lives. Think about it for just a moment. Some of you have gotten to the place in your finances where it's on life support. Literally, it's like, beep. 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 Sometimes you feel like you hear the beep. Anybody know what I'm talking about? And then God breathes life into what felt like was hopeless. I'm telling you, you ought to have reason to celebrate if he is working in your life. And I don't want us to get it twisted on our perspective when it comes to Christianity. Coming to church is not an information gathering exercise. Coming to church is a celebration of what God has done and what God is doing. And if you're doing it right, he has put something inside of you, Jesus, okay? And that if you're doing it, Jesus can't stay inside of you and not want to impact those around you. And so you ought to be seeing other people's lives changed as a direct result of what God has inspired inside of you. And then every day becomes a celebration of like, look what God has done. When you consider what Jesus has done for you, every day you can find a reason to celebrate. But so many believers are pouting while God is partying. Man, we got to change our perspective, man. We got to change it. You could live differently in every area of your life if you would shift your perspective. I'll wrap it with this. Last week we showed you this video. I'm going to show you this video, and I want to bring home the lesson that God gave to me. This was the video where we caught the fish on a long day. Let's roll it. We are out here at Lake Fork filming for our series, Keep Casting. And it has been a brutal, brutal day and a half of 100 degree plus temperatures. We've caught exactly one fish today. We were coming up on these docks right here, and we really had given up hope that we were going to get a bite. And I flipped our favorite bait, what's it called?
Rage crawl.
Rage crawl, shameless plug, up on this dock right here, about 8 foot of water. And all of a sudden, I mean, Big Bertha grabbed a hold of it. And we just kind of want to show you what it means to keep casting, because when you keep casting, even though it feels like it's hopeless, some days, you're gonna catch the one. Yeah. Oh.
That's what it's all about.
That's what it's all about. So when we caught that fish, I have to set this up for you. We went out with the guys, and there are certain days that's just gonna be bad, and there was conditions that were bad, and I told the guys, I said, if we don't catch a fish by 9 o'clock, we're gonna go out at 5:30 a.m., okay? And I want you to know that I know that sometimes people like casually ask me, like, hey, can we ever go fishing? And I just want you to know that I'm being merciful when I tell you that a day fishing with me is not what you think, okay? So it's a long, arduous day. Anyway, so we got out there at 5:30 a.m. and we're casting, and we take a break at 9, all right? We blanked. And so we take a break, and the guys take a nap till 10:30, and we go back out, and we're at Lake Fork Marina, and two guide boats that are trailered, two trucks pass us with the boats, and I know those guys and through past relationships, and I told our guys, I was like, hey, those guys are leaving. The guides with their customers are leaving. Like, they're going to another lake. And I said, text him. And so we text the guy, and he's like, yeah, we've been on the lake all morning. Now, these are guys that do this every day on this lake. And they said, we haven't caught anything. And so I looked at our guys and I was like, we're going back out there, but let's know this, we're not going to catch anything. And so we go out there and sure enough, guess what? We don't catch anything. And it's all the way at the end of the day and I flipped up against that dock and wham. And so the boat, the atmosphere changed and we started celebrating. And I will tell you that we had our shirts off. It's 102 out there, and that you don't even want to see that. Those four guys with their shirts off, it's not impressive. And so we put our shirts back on, and we shot this video, not even knowing that God was getting ready to speak something into us that for me, this was like a fresh wind, fresh fire, I guess. And so as we were going home, it wasn't until hours later, God said this, I mean, so clearly to me, and I think this is the part that you will hold on to this one, I think, for the rest of your life. He said, you see, that one fish, whenever you catch a fish, you handle it, you take a picture, and you let them go, okay? They all live, all right? The bass or sport fish. You handle it about 1 minute. 1 minute. You take it out, chi-chi, maybe 30 seconds, but a minute. But that 1 minute made that 12 hours totally worth it. I mean, worth it. And it gave me the hope for the next time I go out there. And so God said that 1 minute of glory is what you have to embrace. That's what you have to hold on to. And I started thinking about it from a weird perspective because I'm a preacher nerd. And I told the guys, I was like, this is what we're going to do. I'm going to do some research and think, how many words did Jesus say while he was here on this earth? And how long did that take and all that? And I did the math. And this is rough math because you're trying to translate from one language to another language. But if you take all the duplicates out because of the synoptic gospels, it's about 31,426 words is what Jesus spoke to people while he was on the earth during his ministry. 3 years, we'll use the Hebrew calendar. That's 1,080 days. And then if you take out 8 hours for sleep, it boils it all down. I'll make it simple for you for all the non-math people. 1% of Jesus' ministry was spent doing miracles. 1%. 99% of the recorded time that the disciples walked with Jesus was walking and waiting. We glamorize our faith, we glamorize the Bible, and it's almost as if you think every day awesome was happening. But what if I told you that 99% of the time it's walking and it's waiting, but every now and then when you cast it out there and you catch a sinner saved by grace, and you see life change happen. It takes about a minute to baptize each one of these people that we saw come up here last week. And I'm going to tell you, I'm going to hold on to each and every one of those minutes of glory because it makes all the grind, it makes all the difficult, all the hard, all the stuff that happens behind the scenes that no one sees, that 1 minute of glory, you better grab hold of that if you want to make it through the next 12 hours, the next 12 months. Too many marriages aren't celebrating the 1 minute of glory. As parents with your children, you better make sure if you're going to hold them to that high standard, you better celebrate that 1 minute of glory. If you're a boss, oh my gosh, if you're going to tell them all about all the ways that they did it wrong, you better celebrate when they get it right, that 1 minute of glory, because it's that 1 minute of glory that's going to get you through the rough season. I hope in our marriages and in our faith and in our family life, we would start realizing that there's going to be more bad than good. There's going to be more difficult than easy. And that's the way it was with Jesus, and that's the way that it is with us. But man, when we see someone's life drastically, dramatically changed, that's worth it, man. See, that's the difference between the wrong perspective and the right perspective. The wrong perspective, the older brother said, he wasted everything, he's not worthy. How's that feel? Just out of curiosity. If someone looked at you and said, you're not worthy. You're not worthy to be in the same room with God. Okay? You're not worthy. You know what you've done. You're not worthy. The older brother's perspective, he's not worthy. He disqualified himself. He's not worthy of grace. You see, there's a very distinct difference between worthy and worth it. Was the younger son who squandered everything, wasted everything, was he worthy of the father's celebration? No. No. But was he worth it? You see, there's a big difference between worthy and worth it. Grace is the difference that says you're not worthy because of what you've done, but you're worth it to my son. And all those days that they walked, imagine when Peter walked out on that water, that 1 minute of glory on the water was totally worth all those other days of walking and waiting. When they got to hear the stones that those Pharisees, I hate them, were holding in their hands, waiting to stone this woman to death because of her sin, and they heard the sound of those rocks hitting the ground and him saying, go your way and sin no more. Do you think that they held on to that 1 minute of glory and that it radically changed their perspective of what God is all about? How about when Peter had failed and denied Christ, and on the backside of the resurrection, Jesus appears and he's on the beach doing a fish fry, and he's saying, you know what? Are you worthy of a second chance? No, but are you worth it? Yeah. Peter, if you'll follow me, I'll do great things with your life. Is there anyone in here that needs to hear? You might not be worthy, but by God's grace, you're all worth it. Let's pray. Father, we ask in the name of Jesus that you would wrap your arms of encouragement around every heart that's in here. And if there is one sinner in the house that has not been found, if there's one person in here that is on the edge and is thinking, is this real? I want you to hear this clearly. No matter what you've done, Jesus Christ, if he was here, would sit down with you. He would wrap his arms of love around you. And he would say, if you'll let my grace into your life, we can do something incredible beyond your wildest expectations. I know that if you've been in church and you've been burned, you've heard the murmurs and the whispers of the others talking about your worthiness. Today, I would hope that you would hear God's voice above theirs, that we could shift the wrong perspective, that church is all about that this, the that, the whatever. And I'm going to tell you what Jesus Christ, what his church is all about. It's about sinners being found. It's about dead things being brought back to life in a way that only God can do it. And this morning, if you're wondering if it's real, I can tell you that a kid that was far from God had a youth pastor that stopped by his house. He had never been to church a day in his life and shared the gospel with me. And there, God radically changed my life, changed my trajectory. And that's what has led me here today. What I'm trying to say is, you have no idea what God could do with you if you would just let him in and let him minister to your situation and your family. Let's today, when we hear what God has done in this house, I think that we are like the father when the son returned, looking at the older brother and said, we had to celebrate. We had to celebrate. When you know the stories of life, I just had a couple right here after church, the first service. They said when they walked in here, the husband had been thinking about suicide. They had already filed the papers, and some guy way out in the middle of nowhere invited them to our church, and now they have put it back together and it's better than it's ever been. I mean, that was right there this morning. That's something we have to celebrate. We have to celebrate it. I hope today that you have that joy in your heart. If not, while we worship in just a moment, would you let it out? Would you let it out? Let it go. Let God have his way in your heart. If you want to have the right perspective that will If you want to lead your family the right way, you got to let that out. You got to let him in and then let the worship out. Let's stand. Let's celebrate.